Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's Fourth Branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's Explainer podcast series, which is part of RTP's Fourth Branch podcast series. My name is Micah Wallen, and I'm the Assistant Director of Practice Groups and the Regulatory Transparency Project. Today, I'm happy to be joined by both Ashley Baker and Ashish Agarwal to discuss the recent and upcoming developments in antitrust law. Ashley is the Director of Public Policy at the Committee for Justice, and Ashish is Deputy General Counsel at Tech Freedom. Thank you both for taking the time to join us today. I wanted to start off by asking about probably the latest and most recent piece of news in antitrust law, the Amy Klobuchar bill, which was introduced last week. Ashley and Ashish, Ashley, we'll start with you. I'd love to get both of your reactions and analysis, though, on what that looks like and what you think that means for antitrust law moving forward.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for having me. So last week, Senator Klobuchar introduced a long-anticipated antitrust bill that there have been kind of several versions of over the past year, and a lot of talk of, and a lot of analysis going on in both the House and the Senate and within agencies about what do we do with our antitrust laws, if anything, going forward, and how do we handle digital markets. So last week, Senator Klobuchar introduced what is entitled the Competition and Antitrust Law Enforcement Reform Act of 2021. However, I would point out that title is a little bit of a misnomer. Rather than simply giving tools to strengthen enforcement, the bill is more kind of a radical overhaul of the way antitrust law has functioned in the past 45 years. And more than anything, it's a warning for companies not to become too large, essentially. And it's something that would affect all agencies. To give a quick rundown, essentially the Klobuchar bill would prohibit businesses from practices that quote-unquote harm competitors. It reinvents legal standards that define exclusionary conduct as conduct that materially disadvantages or tends to foreclose or limit the ability or incentive of one or more actual or potential competitors, rather than under our current standard, which would be harm to competition in a relevant market or harm to the competitive process or the consumer. So in the United States, our antitrust laws have protected the competitive process and not the competitors, though. So like, harming one's competitors is not an antitrust violation. Outcompeting competitors is exactly how competition is supposed to work. A couple of the specific provisions in here to go over quickly, it's more broadly shifts things to what I would call more of a risk-based framework. Rather than focusing on proposed mergers that present actual harm to the consumer or the competitive process, it would add this risk-based standards to our foundational antitrust laws. And it does so by amending the Clayton Act to prohibit what it calls exclusionary conduct that presents an appreciable risk of harming competition. What exactly is an appreciable risk is a little bit unclear. It seems kind of like the standard is kind of like, I know it when I see it, theory of competition law, which is clearly not a very tractable standard. One of the more concerning parts of the bill for me was what it had to say about IP protection. And although it explicitly excludes applying for enforcing a patent, trademark, or copyright alone from constituting exclusionary conduct, it caveats that with unless baseless or in bad faith, whatever that means. However, these activities may be considered as part of a course of conduct that establishes exclusionary conduct. So in other words, obtaining IP protection for your property can be considered exclusionary conduct under Klobuchar's bill, which I think is very problematic. There are also a lot of, there's a lot in here regarding mergers and regarding monetary penalties and monetary damages, particularly by the FTC and other agencies. And I think we'll get into that in just a few minutes.
Well, Ashley is exactly right that this bill does represent a pretty radical departure from a bipartisan consensus that we've had regarding antitrust law and policy over the past 40 years. So Republicans and Democrats might differ around the edges, but by and large, there has been a broad consensus that antitrust law is about protecting competition rather than individual competitors, that the government bears the should bear the burden of proof when it comes to, you know, enforcement actions, and that that proof should, you know, require, you know, be empirically grounded in actual economic evidence. And this bill breaks from all of that. So, you know, I'll start out by saying some nice things, though, which is I think the bill does do, you know, a couple of good things. One is it would increase funding for the antitrust agencies. And there's pretty broad recognition across the spectrum that, you know, antitrust enforcement resources haven't kept up with the growth of the economy. So that is, you know, probably a good thing. In addition, the bill calls for, more transparency and more informed decision making by the agency. So it calls for, parties, after a merger to provide, data, back to the agencies so that the agencies can do a retrospective analysis to see how, a particular transaction affected consumers. And that's probably a good thing because we do want the agencies to be making informed decisions. Unfortunately, though, as Ashley says, the bill does, a lot of other things that are very troubling. So to take, her first example, the bill defines exclusionary conduct as, basically harming a competitor. So, that's essentially, anything that a business does arguably hurts a competitor, from introducing a new product to lowering prices. These are all things that the company is doing to maximize its own, profits. Which they're well within their purview to do, but that also might take away business from one of their competitors. Under the bill, that company would have to would bear the burden of proof that what it's doing is in fact pro-competitive, rather than something designed to harm a competitor. If this part of the bill actually were to become a law, I think the courts would constrain it much in the same way that, under the Sherman Act today, arguably any contract at all is anti-competitive because every contract is a restraint of trade. But, over time, courts have really narrowed that statutory language into something that makes economic sense. And I suspect if this bill became law, that would happen too, but it would take, many years, a lot of litigation costs, and create a lot of uncertainty for the business sector. Another thing that the bill does is very troubling, as Ashley says, is to change merger presumptions. So basically for mergers of a particular size or where a company has has a particular share of the marketplace, the burden would shift. And instead of the government having to prove that that particular merger is anti-competitive, the company would have to prove that it's pro-competitive. So what this could do is, delay a lot of transactions, add to costs and uncertainty, and really disadvantage American companies vis-a-vis, their foreign competitors. And, one of the things to keep in mind is that these proposals extend beyond, so-called big tech. There's a lot of, frustration with, our biggest technology companies on both sides of the aisle for different reasons. But these proposals would affect, healthcare, energy, retail, you name it. So I think a lot of industries are going to have to pay attention to these proposals, even though I think the genesis of the concern is coming from, coming from the tech sector. The third part of the bill that I'll highlight for now is the imposition of civil fines. So the bill allows the antitrust agencies to seek, enormous monetary penalties, up to 15% of a company's, earnings, and there's some other provisions as well. One of the huge problems with these provisions is they're untied from actual consumer harm. They're tied to harm to a competitor. So if, some company, lowers prices or takes other actions to grow its business and that ends up harming a competitor, not consumers, mind you, competitors, they can be subject to just enormous fines. So I think that's something to watch as well.
And I will mention that. There's a quick follow-up question I had as well is, does this bill embrace, it seems difficult to go to a protecting competitors instead of competition policy position without embracing big is bad, without just finding companies or, you know, violating antitrust just because of their sheer size rather than their actual conduct. Does the bill speak to that, to sort of returning to that type of analysis that we saw prior to the consumer welfare standard, or does it sort of step around that issue and that idea?
Oh, it absolutely embraces that idea that that big is bad. And it's interesting, you know, that concept came around, what wasn't, prevalent sort of in the early days of antitrust. But, under President Johnson, Donald Turner, who was Assistant Attorney General under President Johnson, started to chip away at that notion because, he recognized and they recognized 60 years ago that was not a viable economic foundation for antitrust law. So to give you an example of how the bill embraces that big is bad concept is, it says that any merger is subject to this, additional scrutiny and flip presumption if, the acquiring company has market power in any market. But take, Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods. Well, Amazon wasn't in the grocery market, whenever that acquisition took place. There was no particular reason to think that Amazon was leading to higher prices for consumers. Yet under this bill, Amazon would have to prove why its acquisition of Whole Foods was pro-competitive. Doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense.
And I would add to that, in litigation, proving pro-competitive efficiencies is incredibly difficult, if not almost impossible. And when it comes to, shifting the burden of proof to the away from the government, which, really goes against our fundamental system of fairness and due process, and to the companies, it's based on what's really kind of a fake litigation crisis. Is there rationale before this? It's not as if the FTC and the DOJ are having trouble winning cases. And this particular area, I think it's in the past decade, the FTC and DOJ combined have lost, I believe, 4 or 5 cases. And there's only been one time ever in a litigated case that a defendant has successfully prevailed on an efficiencies defense. So when you shift the burden, you're making it really, really difficult for the defendant. This is going to affect everyone across all sectors as well.
And one of the things that I'd caution people who might be, angry at a particular industry sector is that proposals like this really do give, the government quite a bit of power over how private actors are operating in the economy. So we see this happen in the, the context of the Federal Communications Commission, where, they have this broad public interest standard and they have to approve, transactions. Under a much more amorphous standard. And what has happened over time is the FCC has often essentially browbeat companies into agreeing to certain terms before they all approve transactions, even when those terms don't necessarily have anything to do with consumer welfare. So there are examples where the FCC has required companies to agree to particular criteria, hiring criteria or what have you, that that just raises a lot of concerns. One phrase we throw out there is, we do not have a mother may I economy in this country for very good reasons.
And you're right, you can see this playing out across other agencies, across other sectors, just kind of more fundamentally from that, mother may I perspective. I mean, you have not only the FCC, you see that across the EPA, you see that in the financial services industries. I mean, if you can recall how MetLife, for example, was subjected to what were some really unclear standards that really made no sense at the time and had nothing to do with risk. I think you're going, down the path of just, letting the bureaucrats make judgment calls that gives them a vast amount of discretion, and then you're calling on the courts to rubber stamp it, essentially.
So, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, how do you think the bill will be received on the Hill? You know, we obviously have the third way report from Representative Buck, and certainly there are Republicans who are interested in taking a more aggressive stand. How should those sorts of Republicans think about this bill?
That's a really great question. And I think, so starting with the third way report, it does, there are some symmetries between some portions of this bill and some of the recommendations in the report, or some of the things that were in that report that said we need a little bit of further feedback, which I think it's very important that we give more feedback as experts on those issues, such as burden shifting and essential facilities, and some of those things are listed in the third way report. But one difference, though, specifically going back to burden shifting and how that it would be implemented with the third way report, it's called on shifting the burden of proof away from the government by having Congress clarify the intent of the Clayton Act, whereas it's a lot more aggressive in the Klobuchar bill in that it's asking Congress to directly amend Section 2 of the Clayton Act. And I'm not entirely sure. If that would be much of a practical difference, which of those two routes you went. But I do think that's something that kind of stood out to me. Overall, though, I think there are a lot of things in here that Republicans should disagree with, because it affects industries way beyond tech. And sure, maybe this can be applied to one or two tech companies. Maybe it will really, dismantle a company or two, or really have, harm them. But I think, before we get into how it should be received, I think an appropriate question for both sides is, what are you trying to achieve? And I think for many people on the right, what they are trying to achieve is not a competition-related concern. I think a lot of their concerns over speech and privacy and some of these other issues are very valid concerns. I don't think they belong in the realm of competition law, where you have those on the left side of the aisle who just think that big is bad, corporate power as a whole is bad, and don't really have the same capitalist foundations as those on the right. I think it's worth reiterating to those on the Hill and the right of center is how this will not stop a just tech. You can't pass a law like this and expect it to be used one time and then they will stop.
Well, actually, you're spot on about that. And, in addition, I hope that people recognize that, the United States is not operating in a vacuum here. There are, many Democrats have made the point that, we need to be concerned just as a country about competition from China. I think it was Representative Ro Khanna who said, we don't want, to through overly aggressive antitrust enforcement to create a world where the biggest tech companies are all, Chinese state affiliated companies. And that's not to say that, big tech companies or any segment of the economy should be given a pass from our antitrust laws. Not at all. They should be held accountable just like everybody else. But, the idea that the Congress would enact a law designed to kneecap are some of our biggest companies who are, quite frankly, responsible for, a lot of the growth that we're seeing in our economy and a lot of the innovation, strikes me is somewhat problematic and ill-advised.
I completely agree. And when this bill was introduced, she didn't know that she'd like to see more hearings related on how it could be applied to other industries specifically pharmaceuticals, telecom and communications, agriculture, which affects, a large swath of middle America. Also, railroad industry, I think, was mentioned at one point, which was a bit curious because we've kind of been there before, and railroad deregulation was hugely successful. So I don't think the intent even of this was just the tech industry. I think that this is really a restructuring of our entire economy in disguise.
And do you both think that this is indicative of the Biden administration's planned approach to antitrust law? Do you think this is going to be sort of the policy positions we're going to see from the White House for the next 4 years, or do you think there's going to be some meaningful distinctions there?
I would say a think it's indicative of the way that he has approached regulatory review is one thing that sort of stood out. Particularly, he's asking the OMB to review regs in a way that kind of fully accounts for benefits that are impossible or difficult to quantify, or you can't really put on paper. And that's not really very, you know, tractable. That's not really grounded in economics. And I see that playing out here as well. That's one parallel. I'm not sure if Ashish has more to, you know, build upon that.
No, I am hopeful that this is not the approach that we are going to see from the Biden administration. Of course, we haven't seen, you know, who he's planning to nominate yet to head the antitrust division or to chair the FTC. You know, one of the people who has been heavily involved is Bill Baer. At both the FTC and at DOJ. And, you know, Mr. Baer is somebody who comes from this kind of broad bipartisan consensus of the past 40 years. He, you know, would rather be, you know, more aggressive than others. He has, I believe, you know, more recently at Chairman Cicilline's hearings last year, talked a little bit about maybe changing, you know, presumptions for certain mergers, but he is not somebody who is, you know, looking to, you know, rewrite, you know, antitrust law and, you know, move away from the consumer welfare standard. So I'm hoping that the Biden administration will adopt more of that, more of that approach, you know, within the lines, and that this bill from Senator Klobuchar is, you know, much more of kind of an opening salvo, something that might frame, you know, where the negotiations take place, rather than as something that, you know, seriously has a chance of getting enacted into law.
I more broadly agree with that. And to clarify, you know, it's still very early, and there's nothing that's come out of the Biden administration yet, specifically, you know, related to this, that is hugely alarming. I was just pointing to that one example as one thing that kind of uses the same standard that's hard to quantify. But I generally agree with what you said there.
And one last question before I give you both a chance to cover anything you'd like to cover before we close is, I feel like one aspect of the antitrust debate in recent years is the sort of unexpected joining in the fray of some notable Republican senators and representatives, and mainly because of concerns over big tech and censorship of free speech, et cetera. Are there any sort of bones thrown to that side of the aisle in this bill? Do you think that there's a likelihood that some Republicans will find things that they like in this bill that have those concerns, or did this bill take a different approach?
Go ahead, Ashley.
Sure. So, and I would say that I think the fact that we have that political dynamic at this moment in time definitely lent itself to this bill overall being more aggressive than it could have been otherwise. And they're hoping to kind of ride on some of that anger over big tech, and hoping that people on the right side of the aisle don't notice that this applies to essentially everything else. But getting back to what I said about, you know, the first question needs to be what problem are you trying to address? I think the left and the right are trying to address two very different perceived problems. And with the problems that the right is trying to address, I think a lot of those are not competition problems. And that's very relevant to keep in mind.
So I didn't see anything in the bill about, you know, Section 230 or holding, you know, companies or platforms accountable for those free speech issues. So in that sense, no, I didn't see, you know, a bone thrown there at all. And I'll note that, you know, even you know, Representative Buck in the Third Way report, you know, and he, you know, offered quite a bit of praise for Chairman Cicilline, did say that there wasn't enough discussion about those sorts of issues. You know, we don't see any of that discussion in the bill. I do think it's important, you know, as Ashley is alluding to, for Republicans to have their own, you know, vision for antitrust law going forward. Senator Lee has, you know, a bill out there that calls for, you know, one antitrust agency. That's very consistent with, you know, the unitary executive, you know, viewpoint that many conservatives had. But unfortunately, I don't think this bill is, a bill designed to, to get a lot of Republican votes.
No, it's not designed for Republican votes, but I think the political dynamic at the time, it makes the environment more conducive to something as broad as this, at least, kind of the substance a bit aside.
Yeah, gotcha. Interesting. And I guess before we close today, just is there anything else either of you would like to cover or discuss?
Go ahead, Ashley.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to ask if maybe you could elaborate a bit on the provisions in the bill related to fines and civil penalty authority. That's more your area of expertise.
Yeah, it was just really surprising. And this is kind of in the section on exclusionary conduct, and it allows the antitrust agencies to seek civil penalties up to 15% of the total U.S. revenues for the person accused of this exclusionary conduct, or 30% of U.S. revenues of any person who was affected by this exclusionary conduct. Those, if we're talking about the tech companies or the energy companies or healthcare, you are talking about potentially, tens of billions of dollars in civil fines that are untethered from actual consumer harm, and that would be on top of the treble damages and injunctive relief and the other things that you can get through the existing antitrust laws. So it's it is just an enormously large sledgehammer designed to address, as Ashley is alluding to, what is the real problem here?
And I think the fact that it's on top of treble damages and other penalties and other perhaps even structural remedies, really, you want if you're going to have civil penalties that are this broad, they need to go back to the consumers in an appropriate way that matches the offense. And when you're stacking damages on top of damages, it's really what you're accomplishing is just putting a sledgehammer to the company, not trying to redress actual consumer harms.
I guess the final point I'll make is that there's a real risk of chilling pro-competitive behavior here. Antitrust law is rarely black and white unless you're talking about something like naked price fixing. A contract that it might be exclusionary and anti-competitive in one context, in another context, in most contexts, is just fine. So with the prospect of these enormous damages, I do think that if this bill were to become a law, I think you'd chill a lot of very pro-competitive behavior. I think it would take the courts several years to sort out what really, in the agencies, several years to sort out what the real risks are.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not necessarily black and white, but one thing I think is very clear is just that undercurrent antitrust law, evidence of profit-seeking behavior alone is not enough to establish antitrust liability. And that's essentially what this does.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to thank both Ashley and Ashish for joining us today. This was a really great discussion on a pressing area of law. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in to this episode of RTP's Explainer podcast series. Please check out our website, regproject.org, to learn more about this issue and a host of other regulatory topics you may be interested in. Again, thank you both, and this is RTP signing off.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.